What's going on, everybody? Welcome into episode 25 of Lobbing Scorchers. This is Ari Lilienwall. I got producer Noah here with me remotely. Noah, say what's up to the people.
We made it. We did 25 episodes, Ari. Should we retire?
Is it time to retire? It's a big milestone. I'm pretty happy with making it to 25. Looking forward to 26. Appreciate everyone as always for tuning in. We got a big show for you today. We've got our first ever returning guest in the history of Lobbing Scorchers.
So two times.
It's a lot of milestones going on this episode. We've got Mark Kastner from Sounder at Heart, who was our first ever Lobbing Scorchers guest back on episode like 9 or something. He's going to be coming back to lay down some takes about the Seattle Sounders, who we're going to lead the show with them today. I said on episode 24 that my new policy was that we're not going to lead with the Seattle Sounders until they score multiple goals in an MLS game. And they actually did that. They scored multiple goals in an MLS game at the San Jose Earthquakes. They did not win the game. They lost the game, but they scored multiple goals, so we can lead the show with them. And I think it's good that we're leading the show with them, actually, despite the loss, because the discourse was hot after this game. I crowdsourced some questions on Twitter, and I got about 70 responses. So we're going to get to those later when we do our roundtable with Mark. And the takes were hot. A lot of people replied, which I appreciate. So we're not going to be able to get to every single one of them, but I'm going to do our best to hit as many as possible. And then we're going to jump around the league like we've been doing and talk about some of the other results that went on around MLS. And then we're going to call it a wrap for episode 25. But before we jump into the Sounders and bring Mark in, Noah, I want to do a recap of our experience at the Ballard FC U.S. Open Cup match at Memorial Stadium. We attended Ballard FC versus Spokane Velocity the other night at Memorial. And it was a good time, man, wasn't it?
It was fun.
Ballard FC didn't pull out the dub, but the fashion in which they lost was pretty – it was entertaining,
it was top
I would say.
For sure.
Yeah, it was – a pretty entertaining 0-0 until the 96th minute. And then Spokane Velocity scored one of the sickest goals I've ever seen in person.
Oh, yeah. It was insane.
Yeah. So 0-0, 96th minute or whatever. They send a corner kick into the mixer. Botched clearance by Ballard FC. And my guy comes flying in from out of nowhere with like a aerial scissor kick from almost outside the box. He was just inside the box. Top bins. What a goal. But I think, you know, my main takeaway, that was my second ever Ballard FC game, and they really have it going on. Like they get like, you know, 1500, maybe 2000 people at their games. And the atmosphere is live. Memorial proved to be a fun venue for an Open Cup match. I thought.
Yeah. There was 2,400 people there. So
2,400. Okay. Yeah.
It was a good,
that's more, I think, than they pack at Interbay.
Yeah.
Interbay is more like 1,500, I believe. So, despite the unfortunate result, I really recommend hitting up Ballard FC games. Shout out, Lamar Nagel and the ownership group for fourth division side, man. Like it's a really like, not even that, you don't even need that qualifier. Like it's just a lively scene for any team. Yeah, good times at Ballard FC.
Yeah. And it was pretty sick too, because ownership is even waiting in line for food just like everybody else. So
that was my one complaint, is the taco stand that I was at. I spent about an hour waiting for my tacos.
We did wait for an hour, and then I got sick, but they were it was not taco related.
To be fair to the taco stand, they were under a ton of pressure.
They were under attack.
Incredibly backed up with their orders.
All out attack.
I'll cut them some slack, but
it was good though.
But okay. Let's dive into the Seattle Sounders, Noah, shall we?
Let's do it. Let's bring in the legend.
Yeah, so to supplement our Seattle Sounders coverage today, we brought on our first ever returning guest in Lobbing Scorchers history, Mark Kastner from Sounder at Heart, longtime Seattle Sounders blogger slash, I don't know, Mark, is there another title that, anything more to your title that you want to add?
Mark is muted.
Mark is muted.
That's a good bit.
Nah, man, I'm a blogger in the most like derogatory way possible.
That's well, good. You know, I don't mean it derogatorily. Thanks for joining the show. How are you doing, man, after last night's game?
I'm like never great because I have since moved to Minnesota and the games kick off super late. So I'm just in general pretty crabby when I have to watch the Sounders kick off at basically 10 p.m. And that last night, Saturday night, was not just didn't put me in a good mood. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, no, understandably. Seattle Sounders lose 3-2 at PayPal Park against the San Jose Earthquakes. And, you know, out of all the negative results that they've taken so far this season, I mean, they're 0-2-2. I think that was probably the most tilting out of all of them to date, just in the way that it went down. You know, not necessarily that they lost, but how they lost. They actually scored multiple goals in this game. Rui Diaz PK, the PK merchant, strike again. And a goal from open play, guys. A goal from open play. Danny Musovski is the one who finally scored it.
As they said it would never happen.
The millennial Walton Goggins.
Exactly. So there was that. But there were more injuries leading up to this game. So the lineup was really out there. There's a lot going on with this. Vargas got a concussion in training leading up to this game. Leo Chu did something to his knee leading up to this game. So they both were out of the lineup. You had Sota Kirihara and Danny Leyva in the double pivot. You had Christian Roldan moving from the right to the left wing. You had Dylan Tevez on the right in this 4-4-2 that they've been running with Jordan and Raul up top. I'll just lay down my first reaction when I saw that lineup graphic, which was like, you know, obviously unfortunate and frustrating to have even more injuries in this sequence where it seems like everyone on the team is getting injured and all the most important players are getting injured. But, you know, we talked a lot on the show in the last couple of weeks about how, you know, if it's going to be kind of a slog and a grind like this through injury, the injury riddled stretch, I would rather see something like just different, a new wrinkle with the personnel. So I didn't get any of what this kind of the stuff I've been talking about with the starting lineup graphic, but you know, I think the Sota Kirihara and Danny Leyva double pivot and Dylan Tevez on the right wing, my reaction was like, okay, I'm at least intrigued to watch this, you know, see how it goes. I don't know if it's going to go especially well, but at least it's like kind of a new curve ball to it that we hadn't seen yet. So I was interested in it from that standpoint. I think the unfortunate thing about this game is we've talked a lot about with this team about the struggles on offense and how they can't score goals. But this team has been good defensively. They were elite defensively last year. And the defending in this game was criminal. You had two instances of utter defensive malpractice. The second goal that Seattle conceded came directly after the first goal that they conceded, almost on like the next sequence of play. They let San Jose get out in transition for a really easy goal that was initially waved off, but then he was on Preston Judd, I think he was onside. He was onside, so that goal stands. And then after Danny Musovski equalized in the 81st minute, they actually gave themselves a chance at pulling a result in this game. And they literally let San Jose score immediately on the ensuing kickoff. Obobese scores. Musovski scored in the 81st minute. Obobese scored in the 82nd. So anytime you have one sequence like that in a game, like I said, defensive malpractice, that's going to be a tough film session. They had two in this game. And the second one that they conceded was to lose the game. So I think that was the most frustrating thing for me is the defensive effort. I didn't think anyone on the back line covered themselves in glory. Jackson Reagan, Alex Roldan, and Nuhu all made pretty backbreaking, critical mistakes in this game. I guess Yamar is the one player on the back line who had an acceptable game, but everyone else, that was tough. And the result is 0-2-2, last place in the West. They're off to Seattle's off to the worst start in the league statistically. It's them and the Revs who are off to the worst statistical starts in the league.
Always good to be compared with the Revs.
It's not what you want right now. There was a lot of insult to injury going on in this game. I don't know how much of this you guys saw, but Nicholas Ladero scored a free kick banger for Orlando City SC. Slammin' Sam Adeniran is hosting his own personal cook show for St. Louis City SC every week. He has 10 goals and 1,300 MLS minutes, 3 goal contributions this year. And Brad Smith scored a 96-minute game winner for the Houston Dynamo.
That looked like a charity goal, though. That was pretty funny that they just kind of let him walk to score that one.
Hey, I mean,
I didn't know left backs were allowed to score.
He got one. Alex Roldan got called Alex Rodriguez on the broadcast. So shout out to Alex Rodriguez.
Hey, Rod, baby. They are playing like the Mariners. So
yeah, you get a run of play goal and a Cody Baker assist. I wanted to note that. That was a really great assist. But 0-2-2. So with that, I'll bring our little round table in to air some grievances. Mark, let's start with you since you're our first ever returning guest in Lob and Scorcher's history. I just laid the recap down of what took place. Hit me with your just general reactions and thoughts first on this game and then the general state of the team. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I think that's the dumbest I've seen the Sounders play in a very, very long time. I was kind of trying to like rack my memory, and it's been half a decade at least. That actually might be the dumbest I've seen the Sounders play under Brian Spencer, because like before that, you have like really early era kind of Sounders and MLS and just kind of like basically a different league at that point. So it was just like, I can handle the Sounders being bad. I'm fine with that. You know, that they are missing a lot of very good players still. And then even the very good, you know, what I would say are the good players that can play right now, either can't start or playing out of position or are just not like totally healthy themselves. So I can kind of weather stuff like that. I'm fine with that as long as I can kind of see a vision. But there's just nothing there for me right now. There are very few positives. I would say, as you kind of called out, in MLS, when you have to start your, let's say, fourth and fifth choice central midfielders, I thought you could probably argue over the course of the 90 minutes, those guys are probably in the conversation for man of the match. I thought they played really well. Danny Leyva in particular, who a year ago was loaned out and, you know, probably were like, hey, this is the end of his Sounders career. But, you know, he stepped in and played really well. You could probably make the case that that performance last night was better than anything Josh Atencio and Obed Vargas has done all season. So that's a bright spot, I guess. But I just like, I hate when teams make dumb mistakes. I'm fine getting beat in general. Like, hey, it's MLS. It's still March. You can lose some games and it doesn't really matter. But just to kill yourself like that is just so stupid. And that's the biggest frustration is you can see that there are partnerships all across the field that just don't trust each other anymore. And that's what really bums me out. Like, so the third goal, right? San Jose, I guess you could even talk about the second and third goal having kind of the same ethos of mistake involved. Yep. Where you have, you know, it's off of a restart. Yeah, sure. But you have Jackson Reagan gambling essentially, which he's allowed to do as kind of the like the last line of defense in this setup. And then you have Nuhu, who just doesn't do anything in support. Like, I tweeted out a screenshot this morning of where Nuhu was, where he was on the field for the third San Jose goal. And there are midfielders and wide midfielders further back on defense on a San Jose restart than he was. And it's like, what are we like, what are we trying to do here? Like, to go all like Taylor Twellman, like, what are we doing? What's the like thing we're trying to do other than just kind of weather the storm of injuries? And there's nothing you can build on right now. There's nothing. And that's like frustrating as hell. And when you have scab referees that bail you out, like that penalty that the Sounders got last night, you have to take those opportunities and turn them into something.
Yeah.
And they just don't do that. When Austin FC shows up in Seattle and has like no interest getting across midfield, you have good enough players, you have enough experience to kind of turn this into something, and they just are not taking the opportunities given to them. And they're playing stupid. So that's why I'm so frustrated.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that was a good, the penalty kick that Rui Diaz got awarded. I mean,
I think you always kind of look at these things like, okay, how would I react if that were
a
situation reversed? Yeah. And I think Sounders fans would rightfully be livid if Jackson Reagan conceded that penalty or Yamar conceded that penalty. Cause it's just like, you could make an argument, but you just never see that thing called. And this is the same referee who hasn't worked since the first week of the season when Miami played LA, because he goofed up and sent was it Marky Delgado off?
Marky Delgado, yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, so this is one of the scab referees that isn't even good enough to referee every week. So it's like, I don't know. There are 10,000 things I'd rather talk about than the referee. But again, given the opportunity, you get a soft penalty. You get a moment where Raul Rui Diaz can do the only thing he's seemingly can do right now, and that's score a penalty, which is
penalty merchant.
You got to, like I said, you got to take the opportunities when they come. And then you work yourself into a situation where you do equalize against, frankly, a bad team. San Jose is not good. And the fact that they've beaten the Sounders three times in a row is, I don't know if alarm bell should be going off, but like really hard conversations in the mirror should be happening when that happens.
They haven't beaten San Jose in six matches.
They can't beat them.
You get bogey teams or whatever, but that's why I kind of come back to like, give me something to work with here. And there's nothing there.
You know? Okay. I mean, I did think the fact that Cody Baker and Danny Musovski were the ones who finally combined to score the open play goal. You know, it's like, yeah, see, like when you're in a situation like this, sometimes when you give guys a shot, they'll reward you for it. So I guess, I don't know if that's something to build on, but it was something that was nice to see. But I mean, just kind of going back to some of the stuff that you were talking about. I mean, two out of the three concessions in this game, it's just, it's criminal. Like that can't happen immediately after a concession and then immediately after an equalizer, especially immediately after an equalizer. When you get an equalizer in the 81st minute, like that's where some of the game management stuff that we talked about with this team last year like comes into play. And to let them immediately go down the field on the ensuing kickoff and get the game-winning goal in the 82nd minute when you scored the equalizer in the 81st. I mean, that watching that was just incredibly frustrating. Let's get into some questions from the audience. But before we do that, Noah, do you have any post-game takes, thoughts, reactions on that game or on the state of the team?
I feel like Mark pretty much covered how I was feeling too. But it's a sad sight to see. Yeah. Like I think probably when we get into the questions here, we'll shed some more light, but it seems I'll start with the positive for me was I was ecstatic to see a lineup like this, not because I was excited that we were playing like fifth, sixth string positional players, but I was excited that Brian was finally actually taking a chance on some of these players that we've seen really good flashes from, and some not good flashes from, but like getting Soto back, seeing him play, seeing Danny Leyva play really well was really nice. Whether it's just personally for them as players or, you know, maybe they can fit into a role in the team. That would be awesome. I think Danny Leyva played better than Obed has played basically the entire time. And I think that's something that you should recognize and probably slot him in. And I thought Cody Baker was the best defender on the field other than Yamar. I mean, it's like without a question. He was the photo that Mark had posted, the screenshot of the counterattack goal right after the game-winning goal for San Jose. He's right back in there with the defense. And Nuhu is literally 800 miles. He left the stadium. He would rather leave the stadium and go get a bag of chips than defend. So, I don't know. I mean, there were positives, and then the negatives are just like, holy shit, guys, we finally did it. We scored two goals, and we still lost, which we said was going to happen. We said that the San Jose team is so shit, and yet we're still not going to win this game. So, I don't know. It's disappointing, and I'm frustrated, but I also don't know, like, what would fix this? I don't know. And I don't think Brian knows either. I don't think anyone on the team knows.
I think the easiest answer is simply getting healthier, but, you know,
maybe
there's no, yeah, exactly. Like it's 50-50 on, of an impact in a positive direction getting these guys back is going to have. You know?
Yeah.
You know, I think that, like, the Sounders have been, like, in situations like this before. You know, it's the meme, right? The Sounders start slow, so they're obviously going to win MLS Cup this year because that is what they kind of do. But what gives me sort of like pause about this situation versus like the bad stretches they had last season or even seasons before that, even 2022, where like that was kind of like quote unquote rock bottom when they didn't make the playoffs, like that squad was like decimated towards the end, but you could see like they were buying themselves time, like getting draws, getting clean sheets, like even through like last season, they like, you just got to buy yourself time. And the reason why I'm so frustrated with how stupid they're playing is like, you're gambling on nothing here. Like I don't play poker, but I know like if you got like unsuited low number cards, like you probably shouldn't play that hand. Right. And it's just like time and time and time and time again this season, like they're, you know, trying to buy themselves time, and they're just like coming up empty time and time again because they're just doing stupid things. And it's like, okay, yeah, this team will get healthy. The West is bad. They'll still probably make the playoffs. Like Kansas City made the playoffs last year and they didn't win a game for like
10 games,
like 50 weeks or whatever it was.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, I'm not really worried like long term, but you gotta get like, I mean, maybe I am, you know, like I didn't come into the season expecting this team to compete for Supporter Shield. So it's like all I really care about is like having like some consistency to build on. And there's nothing there. And the biggest frustration is like, in times like this, you start seeing like partnerships form. Like Noah and I were texting before the game, and I was like, I'm so excited to see Nuhu play with a different left midfielder, because that's clearly like a partnership this season that just hasn't worked or ever really. So like you can see how Christian Roldan plays in that position and how Nuhu plays at left back, you could see something build upon there. Nothing. You know, you can see how theoretically, you know, I guess we've seen it for four games, it not really work, but you can see how Raul and Morris could have like a decent strike partnership, not working. You can see how Jackson Reagan and Yamar are like an elite center back pairing in MLS, not happening. So there's just nothing to build on right now. Nothing. And you got to try something different, but Spencer doesn't seem like he wants to do that. He said in his post game press conference, it's not time to threaten people with their starting positions, which I get because, like, yeah, nobody's healthy. You know, how are you supposed to do your job if, like, Jao Paulo isn't playing where he's playing? But it's like, okay, everybody's going to get healthy. This team will probably go on like a decent run. They'll finish like second through seventh in the West, and the playoffs are the playoffs. That's whatever. But it's like, you got to figure out what you have. And if you're throwing these young players into like low percentile situations, like for instance, Cody Baker subs on and he has to play like three different positions all at once. And he does a good job doing that, but you don't want to build on like a young kid having to do stuff like that. You want to bring a kid into like a structure. Like that's why Obed Vargas played so well when he first came into the team, is there was like a very clear definition of like what this 16-year-old is supposed to do in this team. And he shined on it. I saw tweets last night that were like, oh, I'm not seeing what people like in Paul Rothrock. And it's like, what is he supposed to do in this situation? What formation are they even playing? Like
arguing over what position. Yeah. You guys were like what they were actually playing.
I was just happy to see Paul Rothrock finally get on the field. I mean,
yeah.
We've been advocating for that for multiple weeks now, and my guy hasn't been able to get any minutes. So when you bring, like I
wrote about this in my column last week, like it's not just that worse players are playing for the Sounders right now. They are ostensibly worse players, right? Like Dylan Tevez is not as good as Christian Roldan would be in that position. He can do a fine job, but like you're getting worse. But you're also moving good players out of their best position, so they're also getting worse. The 4-4-2 is a different formation than they've played for a decade. So it's like, okay, you as a player, you're thinking just that little bit more, and if you're just getting worse everywhere.
I think we should jump into the questions here quickly, because this all will piggyback off of this.
Yeah, I was going to say it's a good segue. Thank you to everyone who submitted these. Like I said, we're going to try and hit as many as possible. But before we like dive into the individual ones, I got a lot of questions that were basically expressing the same sentiment. So I have them listed out here, and we're going to hit those first, as more like broad questions that a lot of people were asking. And then, we're going to dive into some other ones. So the first one, was a lot of people are wondering how much heat is on Schmetz right now. You know, it's been a very not good start to the season. You could go back to last year, to point to the time frame in which this team has struggled, particularly on offense. 0-2-2 right now, last in the West. Schmetz is one of the winningest coaches in MLS history. He's a Seattle legend. A lot of people were in my mentions wondering how much heat is on him, and not just necessarily just him, but the coaching staff in general. I'll give my take first, which is that I don't know how you guys feel about this, but I'm kind of in general someone who's a little bit agnostic, I guess, for lack of a better word, on the true needle moving impact that a coach really has. And what I mean by that is, like, in this situation, I really don't know and am skeptical that given where they're at with the personnel and the injuries and everything else, like you could put a new coach in that and that's fine, but I'm skeptical that it's really going to change anything. And I think the reason that Schmetz has the leash that he does is, you know, you build equity through winning. And he's got a couple of MLS Cups. He's got CONCACAF Champions Cup, which I realize you can only hang on to those things for so long. But that's the reason he has the equity that he does, is because of the trophies that he's put in the cabinet. And that is something to take into account when you're evaluating it. At the same time, you know, Ziggy was a great coach here and accomplished a heck of a lot here. But by the end of his tenure, it had a feeling that new blood was needed, and it had that era had kind of run its course. I understand why people are asking that question about this era, especially coming off a performance like the one that we saw last night. So I don't know. I'm kind of two minds on it. Mark, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think just that, like, on the face value, you shouldn't fire a coach in March in MLS. You just shouldn't. That's really stupid. That just, like, kind of would compound a lot of different things. I do think that, like, people are frustrated, obviously. You guys just listened to me rant for like 15 minutes about how frustrated I am. I don't want to like dismiss any emotion, and really kind of like your kind of average fan is like, well, things aren't going well. The coach should change so things can go well. That's like a very simple sports equation. And we have an example of that as Sounders fans. Like, Ziggy wasn't going well. We changed the coach. Brian changed things. So on and so forth. But I do think there are like very healthy and right criticisms that Spencer should be receiving right now. And, you know, one of them is like a personnel question, which we kind of already covered. But I don't think people really are kind of clocking what actually happened last season and how much credit he deserves for like what was happening last season. So just to remind you guys, our listeners, like, cause I know you two already know this, but like Nicol Sodero kind of fell off a cliff in terms of form last season. And then Raul Ruy Diaz was like not healthy at all. And that team last year was still built on like, those two guys have to be good for this team to be good. And they obviously didn't score enough goals, and that kind of came to fruition in the playoffs, and they got knocked out by LAFC, yada, 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 yada. But, like, through the start of, you know, the first, like, 10 games or whatever last season, the Sounders were, like, boat racing teams, and then just everything fell off a cliff, like, creatively and offensively. So Smetzer kind of changed the team to just be, like, a really stout defensive team, and they were. And that's really hard to do in the middle of the season, because you kind of come into a season with a plan, which we're seeing right now. And if that plan doesn't really work, things don't really work. That's just kind of how MLS goes. So last season, I think he deserves a lot of credit for kind of like switching what was going on and like kind of riding that ship. You know, like, yeah, I agree with you. Like, changing the coach doesn't really do what I think fans think it does, like, most of the time, especially in the middle of the season and especially at the start of a season. So I think you kind of just, like, hope things get a little bit better this season. And then, maybe you should have that conversation at the end of this season, whether it's maybe Brian stays as the head coach, but maybe, like, you got to look at, like, are the assistants doing what they're doing? Should something there change? is this roster really constructed in the way that like it should be? Like what? I just think there's like there's a broader, more nuanced conversation that isn't just Spencer's bad, so things should
right. So that actually segues into another one of the big questions that I got, which is how much heat should be on Craig Wibbs for the or Craig Wibbs. I always call him Wibbs. Craig Wibbs. How much heat should be on Craig Wibbs for, you know, how much of this is to blame on the roster construction, which I think is another worthwhile and valid question to ask. I think it is still early in the Craig Wibbs era to be fully assessing his body of work. He hasn't had really enough transfer windows to make a definitive evaluation on his tenure, I don't think. But I think there are at least two moves off the top of my head that I can name that deserve the scrutiny that they're getting. And you guys can tell me if I'm missing any. But the first one that comes to mind is the Hebert signing. 1 point whatever million of GAM, right, for Hebert to be the backup forward. You were banking on him at least matching the form that he showed at NYCFC, where he was a provenly consistent goal scorer in the league. And that was a bust last year. That you got pretty much no production out of that roster spot. The other one, I mean, we're on the beat every week, but the Slam and Sam Adeniran trade has backfired. And, you know, Craig Wibbs has given the reasoning behind why he felt like that trade had to happen, given the roster rules that you're working under in MLS. But the fact remains, Sam Adeniran, I have the stats pulled up right here, 10 goals, 2 assists in 1,362 minutes, 2 goals, 1 assist in 281 minutes this year in 3 starts. And it's also like when I watch him play, like he's producing, but he's also just like exactly the type of player that the Sounders can really use. Just a beast of a physically imposing number 9. He's balling out, and they traded him for a very small amount of GAM. So those are the moves that come to mind to me when I'm evaluating Craig Wibbs early on in his tenure here. And they're both frustrating to think about, mainly the Slam and Sam one, man. That one, I get why that's grinding people's gears.
Can I push back on that a little bit?
Yeah.
So yeah, if Slam and Sam's doing what he's doing for St. Louis for the Sounders, that would be ideal. But the coach just didn't rate him. So they had to make a move with where the roster was at that time to get kind of compliant and stuff.
Yeah, and I get that.
And that just happens, you know? Like, how many times in MLS have we seen, like, a guy, like, not be contributing, get traded, and then he's good because he's in a different scenario. He's in a different situation. He's got a different coach, different formation, style of play, everything. I do kind of think you just got to kind of take that one on the chin and just be like, yeah, but I don't think if he's playing, if he's still on the Sounders, I don't think he's doing what he's doing.
It's certainly not a guarantee. And I think people do treat it like it's a guarantee. Like you can just take those numbers over from St. Louis City and guaranteed transfer them over to exactly what he would be doing if he was still in Seattle. You can't really do that. But it is, for me personally, when I look up every week and he's scored another MLS goal in the fashion that he's doing it.
Well, at least he was bad this weekend.
I mean, I didn't watch a lot of that game, but he was just absolutely balling out to start the season, and I think he has cooled down a little bit. But you know, it's more production than the Sounders have gotten out of their backup 9 in 2 weeks to start the season than they've gotten in like the last year, you know?
Yeah. So and it should be said, like, St. Louis traded for him and then also loaned him out. So it wasn't like it happened straight away. Like St. Louis traded for him. He he went on loan to, was it San Antonio?
Yeah.
And then they kind of had an injury situation where they had to recall him, and then he just kind of comes in and starts banging in goals. So, yeah, it would be nice if he was banging in goals for the Sounders instead of an expansion team, but that's just kind of one you have to take on the chin. The one Craig Weibel thing, I guess it's two things, for me, is I don't know if people like totally realize the situation in which Garth kind of left this roster. You know, at the time, Garth Lagerwey, like, he was really good at like telling you like bullshit, basically. But in order to win Champions League, he had to like mortgage the future, basically.
So he's sold out.
Yeah. For it. And it's worth it still. I don't want to like say anything, but when you're in a position like that, where you've got a guy like Garth Lagerwey mortgage, you know, putting all of those chips in that basket, all those eggs in that basket or whatever, he's also the one that knows how to kind of figure out how to get out of that situation. And then he just took off. So this roster was old and dysfunctional when Garth Lagerwey left. Maybe he makes it better if he sticks around. But Craig Weibel is the one that has to kind of take over a pretty raw deal, to be honest with you. And he's just been like conservative in nature, which is fine. I don't know. I don't think anybody really knows enough to like say at this point, like what is good and what isn't bad. But the thing that really frustrates me is this like Arriaga situation, where you've had three transfer windows at this point to trade him, when you have people like Tom Bogart being out there and being like, yeah, they could probably get 800K in allocation money for this guy. And I don't think that's Tom just like guessing. I'm sure he's heard like, yeah, you know, teams have kicked the tire on him. That, you know, for instance, like Austin last year, they had like 9 center backs injured and were basically like begging. I don't know what the offer ended up being, but like you do kind of have to like offset your L's a little bit. And you could probably recoup most of the A-Bear trade with trading Arriaga this offseason. And they just didn't. They brought in 2 center backs to replace him, and he's still playing. And it's like, what are you waiting for? Like, really? Like, yeah, maybe you're not going to get the deal you really want for him, which is like maybe a million. But what kind of message are you sending to the player when he's clearly the fourth choice? He's on a lot. He's on a real, pretty high salary, especially for that type of depth piece. You brought in a guy, Nathan, who is more versatile and frankly better than him to be your kind of third choice. So like, what kind of message does that send to like the team, that just like, oh, this guy is just going to be here?
Yeah, no, I think that's a good shout. You know, like, why have Nathan and Arriaga on the roster? I don't know.
That's what I felt like was the problem too, is it's less of a Craig Weibs not like, yes, he was put in such a shit situation when he got here. I was like, all right, let me give him some time. But then the inaction that has seemingly happened, it's been frustrating, you know, even not moving Leo Chu because you're getting, you know, 200K less than you paid for him, or what, you know, whatever the situation is. Like, he's good, but like, what are we going to do when Pedro de la Vega is back? How is that going to fit in with Leo Chu and all of this other stuff? Like, what are you going to move him? Like, I don't understand. There's no forward thinking, or it's like, let's hoard all of these pieces until we need them, and then never be able to sell them.
When they do play, they're just not.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It doesn't make any sense.
It should be said, like, the reporting around the Leo Chu thing is not solid. It's pretty shaky.
Yeah.
So like, there's no way of knowing like what actually kind of happened there. As far as I know, there was like no formal, like, official offer for him. So like, you can't take an offer that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
But there probably have been formal and official offers for Arriaga that they've just rebuffed instantly. And that's the one that's kind of like, it's not just like waiting for a team to come in with an offer. Like you can actively shop players. Like Garth was so good at that. Like if he needed just that 10% extra, he could go find it. And I don't get the sense that Craig Weibel is active in that sense. And that kind of bums me out.
Yeah, no, fair enough. A lot of people had takes on lineup and personnel changes that they would make. So I had on a couple of those, and then Noah, we can dive into a few of the other questions that we got. But the two biggest ones that I got were, should Jackson Reagan be benched? Should Jordan Morris be benched? So I'll just give my take on those two real quick, and then you guys can tell me what you think. Jackson Reagan, I would be cognizant of recency bias on that one. I know he hasn't had a good last couple of games, but this is still a CB that was a week-in, week-out starter for one of the best defenses in MLS last year. He was starting Champions League games. He showed a lot of upside, I think, in terms of his 1v1 defending and particularly his long passing. So, I don't know. I try not to judge a player off his just the most recent couple of games that have happened. I try and look at the full body of work. So that would be my thought on Jackson Reagan. I think Jordan is the more interesting one. You could say a similar thing in that he's a proven MLS attacker. He's been very productive throughout his career. He's been a guy that has shown he can score you double digit MLS goals in a season. But when you're struggling on offense as much as this team is, I think it's fair to look at any player's role in the attack right now. And then when you see the open play goal finally come and it's Danny Musovski who's scoring it, I mean, you know, I think there could be something to the idea that trying Jordan as a super sub for a game or two could be a good idea. I'm not saying that it's for sure a good idea, but it's worth talking about. So those are how I see those two situations. What are you guys' thoughts? Jackson Reagan, Jordan Morris.
Yeah, I would. I don't think Jackson should be benched. I think that he is often at the scene of the crime just because of the way this defensive structure is. He's the last one there. And so it's like, yeah, if other people are out of position, other people make mistakes, he's having to do a slide tackle at the edge of his box and he gets roasted. But that's just kind of like, I think says how much trust this coaching staff has in him to be there in those situations. And those just aren't coming off, unfortunately. So I don't think you should bench arguably your best defender just because everything else around him is dysfunctional. Cause that just is going to make things worse. And it's going to like, really ruin his confidence, I think. On the flip side, I think with attackers that aren't in form, it's the complete opposite because you can tell a totally different story to that guy, for instance, Jordan Morris. I don't think he works in the way that this formation is going. And like you said, the only open play goal that the Sounders have scored this year came from his backup. I will say I thought Jordan made a very intelligent run to kind of open that space at the back post for Danny, but sure. I think take Morris out. You tell the story of like, hey, we're going to bring you on in the 60th minute after, you know, we've pressed the hell out of this back line and, you know, we're going to go with like a really intense young lineup. And then you're the one that gets to come in and get all the glory and score the goal that wins the game. And so I think there's like a narrative there you can sell the player. So yeah, I mean, like I said earlier, nothing's working right now. So everything should be on the table, particularly like in an attacking sense. And then maybe you build more confidence into the player that when things do come back to like full health and he is playing in front of an attacking band of De La Vega, Rusnak, and Christian Roldan, maybe he does have the confidence and the kind of like belief in himself after kind of scoring a couple of goals off the bench. So yeah, I mean, I think there's this like, just like really cut and dry, like dichotomy people make when you're talking about benching a player, where it's like, you're either a starter or get ready to learn USL, buddy. Where I just don't think that exists with like particularly attacking players. I think you can kind of like bring them out of the heat a little bit and then like help them rebuild their confidence.
Yeah, I agree with Mark there a lot, because I like Jackson Reagan a lot. And it's not just because he is a Big Ten legend. He works hard. Yeah, go blue, right? He works hard. He covers a lot of mistakes for a lot of people. And I think the majority of his showings have been incredibly good. And yeah, he does end up at the scene of the crime. Let's be honest. He ends up covering Nuhu's mistakes a lot. He ends up covering, you know, other wingbacks' mistakes a lot. And if you pull him, his confidence is, I mean, maybe he's strong-headed and, you know, a real Michigan man, but I wouldn't do that when we've seen his partnership with Yamar is really good, and Yamar just getting back, switching up the defense that has just been really good, but also is now randomly faulty. It's recency bias. It's bad. It's dumb. I don't even think like pulling Jordan Morris is the issue. I think his position is the issue, or at least his position in this formation. Me and Mark talked about it a lot. We argued about it quite a bit. I think that he's in this situation, in this formation as a dual nine, he doesn't work. He doesn't work. Him and Raul don't communicate well in that situation. But you could see once Danny Musovski came on and he kind of slotted into more of a winger position. I don't even really know what position he was playing, to be honest. I don't think anyone knew what position they were playing at the end there. But he looked more comfortable. He looked more confident. And he was actually, like Mark said, he was creating space. He was playing like the player that we know he can be. So I don't even think Jordan is the problem with the finishing. I just think that it's like, again, we're in a formation that no one knows how to play in, and he's already in a new formation, but now also in a dual nine position where he has to account for Raul, who that's a whole nother thing to learn and a whole nother complexity to add. So I'm not a bench either of those people. Did they frustrate me last night? Yeah, a little bit, but like, I don't think the game was lost because of those two players.
Good points. Noah, do you have a few of the other questions pulled up? And yeah, we can try and do some quick hitters on these and then get into the around the league stuff before we get out of here. That sound good?
Yeah, let's do it. I'm going to rip off this first one quick from Mikey. Should we expect a drastic upgrade in play when all the starters are healthy and on the field?
Yeah, I mean, I do think so. Like, we're still talking about João Paulo and Albert Rusnak, to name the two most prominent players who have barely played at all this year. Rusnak's been working his way back in. But I think with João Paulo in particular, like in the midst of the form that Seattle's been in through the start of the season here, you can kind of lose sight of the type of impact that JP has on games. And thing about JP is that he brings so much on both sides of the ball, defense and attack, and controlling the tempo of games. His long passing, I think, is going to be really helpful. So I do, if it doesn't look better with when JP and Rusnak get back, we're gonna be having some even more tough conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. I think João Paulo is the type of player that makes every player 20% better. And it's just no question to me that they'll be better if he's playing.
Yeah, it's hard to be patient, but especially as a Sounders fan, we're not used to being patient, but I think that I agree with that. It's not time to smash the burn everything down bell just yet. Noah, please make Brian's insistence on Nuhu make sense. I can't understand how he is so bad at covering his back post. Toss that one to Ari. Make it make sense.
you just don't have a heck of a lot of options right now. But I agree that I want to see more Cody Baker. I agree that the tactics that they've been running this season with Nuhu as the starting left back, it's pretty clear that they haven't been working. So I'm all for the Cody Baker at left back idea, especially because playing at right back last night, he put in a dime. So I think the guys that are performing should be rewarded. And I'm not going to argue with anybody that wants to see more Cody Baker at left back.
Yeah, I can't make sense of that. So I'm just not going to.
No comment. Mark hits him with a no comment. Yeah, it is a little bit baffling at this point. I'm not sure what. Clearly, something in training is, like, you know, Ari always says, something in training is telling them that Nuhu's the right choice. But I think it's time to watch some game film, maybe. Do a little breakdown. Bring in Mark Kastner, and maybe you might change your mind. That's all I got to say. Not saying it now, but what does the team have to do as a whole for it to be time for Schmetz to leave? Where is the bar? I know we touched on this quickly, but I want to know what the bar would be for each of you.
I think that if you go through the rest of this season with JP and with Rusnak and ideally at some point Pedro de la Vega healthy, and you still find yourself in the kind of middling 1.4 to 1.6 points per game teams, I think that's the bar for when you're really going to have to talk about that.
Yeah, I think we're looking at 2016, but exponentially worse to get rid of him during the season. Yeah. There are things outside of his control. I've already kind of talked about what is in his control, but you can't. It's just not all on him, I don't think. So you give him probably the rest of the season, and then if, like, they miss the playoffs, then you're probably like, well, that's two times in 3 years. That's unacceptable. So
yeah, I would be reluctant to just swing the axe so quickly. Like, I mean, it's also dependent on what's the coaching market. Who are you going to bring in to replace him? Like, you know, I think there's a lot of variables to firing a coach that people don't really think about other than let's kick him. I don't know what my bar is. I don't want him gone. Honestly, I don't want him gone. I think hard-headed has been a little bit of a problem, but
go for it. I think people that want a coaching change right now or this season, that is a vibe that I don't think people really kind of have, like, truly clocked. Like, You don't want to do that right now, to be honest with you.
Yeah. No, that's melting down. So a team that's already melting down. From Naves, shout out Naves. Going back to 2024 with three highly paid center backs, only one of which is a starter, and no backup central playmaker. Is that negligent?
It's a good shout, Naves. It's a good shout. We talked a little bit earlier about sort of the logjam of CBs on the roster, which you could look at as stocking up at an important position, but, like, I think it's a good point that has kind of come at the expense of your depth in other areas, and we're seeing that right now. And I think, you know, going back to our discussion about the early tenure of Craig Wibes, that's, you know, I brought up Hebert in the Slam and Sam trade, but I think, honestly, you know, having talked about it more, like, exactly what you're talking about, Naves, that that's probably the most glaring thing.
We haven't played with a central playmaker this year, so we don't know if we have a backup. We don't know how good Paul Rothrock is in that Rusnak role. That is information nobody has, except maybe the training staff. But nobody on Twitter has that information. And I think that's a pretty easy, like, I know better than everybody else take to have is, like, oh, look at the way the roster is constructed. It's bad. I don't like nobody that can talk into this microphone or send a tweet right now has enough information on any of this. We're all just kind of guessing. So I will say, like, when Pedro de la Vega played as a 10 for a half, he looked really good there. So, I think like with the way that rosters are constructed in MLS, like nobody that plays with the 10 has a backup 10. Like if Acosta's out for Cincinnati, they change how they play. So it's not like you can just like have Rusnak, but 30% worse or whatever. It's the Sounders have tried to change the way they play and it got worse anyways. So, but yeah, I would have traded Arriaga. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I agree. No need to dive into that one anymore. I thought this one was interesting. Would you rather take Slam and Sam or Morris right now? We could have traded Morris, gotten value for him, and kept Big Sam. I think our FO is a little sentimental about some of our players.
Man,
at one point, it looked like Morris was kind of a player we could build around.
That's one of those things where it's very easy to say in hindsight when you see the Seattle struggling as much as they have in attack. You see Slam and Sam banging in goals every week. But the actual act of making a trade, like a trade with Jordan Morris at the time frame that's being talked about there, even if you can say that you think it would be a good idea in hindsight, just like how realistic do you think that is for it to be something that like they would actually do, especially considering, you know, you can say that they're too sentimentally attached, but also, I mean, you have to give credit to the fact that Jordan Morris has scored a lot of MLS goals and won a lot of trophies and that's before you even get to the hometown hero kind of aspect, you know, of him being from here and like the Academy star and all that. So I don't know. That's just how I see that.
That is such a bad take. not Ari's, just the way that question's proposed is preposterous.
Yeah, I agree. Jordan is light years ahead of Slam and Sam, unfortunately. I hate to report that to you if you cannot see it with your own eyes, but Slam and Sam's great. We're big up.
We're heavily pro Slam and Sam. We've been on the beat all season.
We love him, but like let's be realistic.
Can you upgrade on Jordan Morris? Probably.
Yeah.
But Sam is not the guy to do that.
No. I wanted to jump into this one because I've actually been interested in this. And I know privately me and Ari have been swirling around rumors, but this is from Seth. Seth says, somebody's got to take responsibility for the training and fitness of this team. They have not been physically or mentally ready for any game this season, or maybe last season too. What do we think about the training staff, folks?
Oh boy, we're gonna go.
We gotta do the dialogue.
Okay, I mean, like these conspiracies have been around for many years. The hamstring FC meme is a real thing. It does seem like Seattle has an inordinate amount of these muscle injuries.
They don't
sometimes. They don't, but like I can at least see why people feel that way. Although the thing I would say is that every fan base says that. Like that's you gotta understand, like every single fan of every team thinks that they have the most hamstring injuries. I think hamstring injuries unfortunately happen a lot in professional soccer. But like my thing on the training staff conspiracies is it's like almost pointless to talk about because it is impossible to know like what, how much it can be attributed to the training staff versus how much of it is just like the byproduct of being a professional athlete playing a sport where you run a lot and put your muscles under a lot of stress. Like if there was actual way to measure that, I would be more interested in it. But like, you know, talking about the injuries that have happened this season, you know, when Albert Rusnak rolls his ankle at training, like, is there anything that the trainer could have done to prevent that? Like,
yes, or you could have been like, Albert, please don't roll your ankle.
You don't roll your ankle. You know, it does, that's unfortunately not going to be a very effective preventative measure, I don't think. With JP, with his hip, like, is there really anything that the trainer could have done to stop like a what seems like a stress injury in his hip? Like, I just don't know about that. So, like I said, my take on the training staff conspiracies is that it's pointless to talk about because it's impossible to measure and it's impossible to know what effect, if any, that they have on the situation.
Yeah, I think like fans in general, sports fans, and particularly Sounders fans, if I do say so myself, they want to attribute like moral failure whenever injuries happen. And that's not how anything works. Like if that's how things worked, if we were scientifically like at a point in society where we knew the exact moment a player was going to pull his hamstring, injuries would never happen ever. Like they would spend the money on that type of like science, you know, sports scientists to be on the team. Like they would do that because if that was a possibility, it would already been explored. Like I guarantee you the people that work for the Sounders are smarter than us and anybody tweeting at us.
They probably have a college degree. I don't got one of those. So
yeah, I went to seminary. So that's how stupid
I am. You know what I mean? Yeah.
So there, like, injuries are not, there's no morality attached to them. They happen or they don't. And can you get better people to help players recover? Can you change training style? Yeah, sure. But nobody, again, I will say, nobody has the information to know that at all. Because, like, okay, so whoever the trainer is right now, say they fire him and they hire somebody who has a better resume, that can actually be worse. It can get worse. It can. Like, just because, like bodies are bodies and these are professional athletes doing like the hardest thing a body can do, which is play sports. So it's like, to even entertain that is like pretty crazy and just like, I can't take a person seriously that does that, because it's just like, there's no, unless you're kind of like doing it jokingly, sure. But even then, that's pretty insulting. I'm going to come out and say it. Like, if you think you're smarter than like anybody that is like making these decisions professionally, that is crazy. You are nuts.
You know,
I do enjoy the, like when people go down that rabbit hole, you know, it's entertaining, but I just don't know.
If you do pull your hamstring though, and you're on any other team, you are a Sounder. That is the law of the universe.
Like the memes are valid. Like that's what I was trying to say.
It's a funny thing to joke about. Like Pedro de la Vega's first injury as a Sounder is like a pulled hamstring. It's
that's
funny.
A good bit.
It's funny because we follow the Sounders so closely, and like hamstrings do get hurt the most in soccer, like factually speaking. So it's just kind of like, yeah, that's pretty funny. It, you know, like he didn't like sprain his ankle or like dislocate his shoulder or whatever. He pulled his hamstring, which is funny. Sure. But like, there's no, you can't like attach any sort of like morality to injuries. And that's like a pretty crazy thing to do.
Yeah, that's good take there. This one comes from a Bitcoin something. It says woke equals broke, but I don't think that is about the Sounders. So I think
that's just true, right?
That's just Freddie Montero on his burner over there. Anyway, we've got this next one. How high are the spoon odds? Because they feel very high.
I would be pretty surprised if it legitimately came to that. I mean, we would be talking about worst team in the league over the sample size of a full season. I still tend to think that if they're able to get healthier, they'll at least be able to return to a place, like I said, where it's more like 1.4 to 1.6 points per game, which is not in the MLS elite, but it's still, you're in the playoff mix at that point. That's what I tend to expect. But, you know, it seems like if the personnel situation stays like how it is right now through the rest of the season, that points per game that I was talking about, I haven't really seen much to think it would be especially high. So, but yeah, I don't know about spooning.
Caleb Porter is a coach in the league again. I'll just remind people. So the odds of the Sounders finishing below his team is very low.
I mean, they're at the same spot on the table right now.
But the Sounders have a game in hand technically. And actually one more point.
Oof.
Yep. So like 100% more points than Caleb Porter's team at this point.
Fair.
With a game in hand.
Yeah, game in hand is important. I mean, listen, and they get to play Philly when it's not raining. So, or maybe it will be raining. Sean asks, what's Jesse Marsh up to?
Talking out of his ass on podcasts.
We're talking Jesse Marsh for
just like we are.
Yeah.
I thought the take right now was that Jesse Marsh should replace Berhalter. I didn't know there was Jesse Marsh to Seattle takes going on.
Apparently that's where we're at. I don't even think we need to really entertain that one. But I saw a couple questions about this, so I'm just going to pick one out of a hat here from Dustin. Where are the 100-plus owners? None of them ever come out and say anything. Does Russell Wilson put any of his own money on this team? No, he's too busy taking losses on his Denver home.
I don't
75
think,
bathrooms.
I don't think relying on Russell to like bankroll a new signing is necessarily like the most pertinent idea right now.
It would
but,
be.
I mean, I see what they're saying. Like,
it would be kind of funny if he took like even just half of the money Denver's paying him to play for a different football team, and like got
a DP with that.
Yeah, that would be like
That'd be a good bit.
I think people
if he cares about winning, he'll front that money.
I also don't think like the structure of the way that like the celebrities bought into the team, I don't think they can actually like legally do that. I think they're, which it would be even funnier if Russell Wilson like bought a DP and then did like some fraud and went to jail. That would be great.
That'd be a really good bit. I'm here for that. That would just be, you know, Mr. Whatever. Mr.
That, jail. That would make up for the Super Bowl interception, right?
No, I think so.
No, why don't we hit a couple more and then we'll hit the around the league takes real quick.
Absolutely. I was just going to say, I've got my final few here. We becoming 2018-2019 RSL? Garth left. We had some short-term success and it feels like it's going downhill. I mean, we have some front office and some coaching stuff. I don't think Brian gets cut with the 50th, but whatever. Don't care about Brian in this part of the question, but are we 2018-2019 RSL?
I mean, I think the difference is that, I mean, there's a pretty stark difference in trophy case there. RSL, they won MLS Cup in 2009, right? Yeah. So they won MLS Cup in 2009. They lost a Champions League final. Seattle's won two MLS Cups and Champions League. So, I mean, I understand the premise, but I would argue that Seattle's recent track record puts them quite a bit ahead of where RSL is in this analogy.
Our owner is also not a sexist, and that's really worth pointing out, I think. So, no.
There we have it. Final question here that I think is the perfect way to end this therapy session for all of you Sounders fans. Are Sounders fans spoiled?
Yeah, and not in a derogatory way, just in that, you know, I always try, I like, when times are tough like this, especially as someone who came into the whole scene as an outsider, I try to remember and appreciate, like, the amount of winning that I've got to be around. And, you know, it's definitely, it's the runs like they had where they were going to MLS Cup every year and they became the only team to win the modern incarnation of CONCACAF Champions League. That's like that's a pretty rare run of success, especially in MLS, salary cap league. So I don't know if spoiled is the right word, but I understand that, like, where the question is coming from.
Yep.
Yep, I agree. All right, that's that. Thank you for submitting your questions and coming to this group therapy session.
I appreciate everyone who replied to our crowdsourcing tweets. If we didn't get to your question, sorry. There was I got almost like 70 of them, so there was no way we could hit all of them. But
if we didn't get your question,
I definitely appreciate everyone who interacts and tunes in as always. We're gonna hit winners and losers from MLS Match Day 5. Mark, you down to stick around for that while we
sure
give our takes on the other goings on? Going, I always mess this up.
Isn't it technically Match Day 6 though?
Oh, did I say 5?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's my bad. Match Day 6. My bad.
The first week when we had one.
Yeah, no, I keep screwing that up because of that. all right, LAFC. We're starting the winners section. LAFC.
Not fraudulent.
5-0 over Nashville SC. So we had our fun with LAFC's little downturn over the last couple of weeks. They had like a 300 and some odd minute scoreless streak that was rivaling the Seattle Sounders offensive attacking futility. But I mean, they destroyed Nashville. They looked like vintage LAFC, which... you know, whenever LAFC chokes a final where they have a 300 plus minute scoreless streak, we're going to have our fun with that. But by the same token, if they win 5-0, that's, I'll give them their credit. But then also, I think the takeaway is just that, like, the reports of their demise, especially or even on the Lobbing Scorchers podcast, might have been premature. You know, it's only one game. But Nashville SC is usually good at defense, and
their goalie got sent off. So it's like, of course, things are going to get out of hand.
That's okay. That's fair. I forgot about that detail. You know what? LAFC's not back at all. Though. That was a fluke result.
No, I still think they're a winner because Bowanga got on the score sheet twice. Yeah, I mean, they're finding their attacking form again. It's they're a winner regardless because. They were a loser, and now they look in prime form. And sometimes it's just about a spark. Sometimes it's just about a vibe.
Yeah, they bounce back. The New York Red Bulls, and specifically Lewis Morgan, they bammed on the Lionel Messi-less Inter Miami 4-0 at Red Bull Arena. Lewis Morgan scored a hat trick, and Dante Monzier assisted on all four goals, I believe. And they didn't even, I don't think they even had Emil Forsberg, their new DP, in this game. It was dumping rain at Red Bull Arena. That's a big win for the Red Bulls. They're in the early stages of getting their new coach integrated. Lewis Morgan had a really good year 2 years ago. He had 14 goals and 4 assists, I think, and then was injured pretty much all of last year. So if they get Forsberg cooks, that was a good signing. And Lewis Morgan looks like back. So I think the Red Bulls might be cooking.
Yeah, the Forsberg insider trading was a great that, yeah, idea.
They, the insider they really cooked on that. I have another repeat from last week, but the LA Galaxy. Okay. Still chaos merchants, still one of the more questionable defenses you'll see in the league. But they came back to beat Sporting Kansas City, the club of professional wrestling enthusiasts, at Children's Mercy Park after they were down 2-0. And they scored three times. Like, it was from the 70-something minute to the 90-something minute. They scored three times unanswered and won 3-2. At Sporting Kansas City. And like, for all the defensive struggles that the Galaxy still have, I'm telling you, they're probably my favorite offense to watch in the league right now. Like, maybe I might put like peak Inter Miami when Messi's playing above them in terms of like watchability. But like, that's it. Like, there, the Galaxy in attack with Joey Paints, Gabriel Peck, Ricky Pooj, and Dejan Jovalić, the hottest number nine in the league right now, they're pretty fun to watch.
Would you say that they laid the smackdown on Sporting Kansas City?
I would say that. It was kind of a rock bottom moment for
I'd say they Sporting Kansas City. They hit them so hard it was raw. You know what I mean?
And then when they play again later this year, it might be a SummerSlam.
People ask me sometimes like if I'm ever gonna like let go of that. And the answer is no. Like I'm not
even when right? Melia retires.
No, and especially when they're not playing well. Like, you know, our friend Tim Foss from Sound at Heart. Tim, shout out Tim Foss. He had a good bit going last year when Sporting KC wasn't playing well, where he would track their record since the rock bottom incident, and they were playing so badly. It was like their record and their goal differential. They're playing so badly that it. It got funnier every week that he did it, and you can click through and it goes for like 100 tweets. And I'm just, I'm going to keep that legacy alive for the rest of my life. Okay. Let's get to the loser section and then we'll get out of here. I hate to keep doing this, but like at this point it's for the bit, Seattle Sounders 3-2 loss at the 0-4 and 0-0 San Jose Earthquakes. You come back from 2-0 to tie it. You finally get an open play goal. Danny Musovski, he does it. And then you give up the game winner the next minute. I can't emphasize this enough. The equalizer was scored in the 81st minute. The game winner that the San Jose Earthquakes scored was in the 82nd minute on the next sequence of kickoff. Like, that's just backbreaking, man. Inter Miami. We talked about the Red Bulls in the winner's section. 4-0, like 4-0 loss at the Red Bulls. I know it was raining and I know you didn't have Messi, but we talked about on the show last week.
But they should be good at playing in the rain. That's their style. They like a slick, quick ball. Like, what are they talking
apparently
about?
Apparently not.
It's also funny because the Red Bulls wanted the game rescheduled.
That is a good bit. Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's funny.
Yeah. Tata Martino said before the game that the Red Bulls like requested that the game get rescheduled and like and FIFA didn't allow it.
And that's then they whammed on them 4-0.
Did you see they also, after they were down 1-0 at halftime, they waited like 9 minutes to come out of the locker room?
Yeah, they've been kind of doing that. It's like a recurring theme for Inter Miami. I don't know if Tata is just letting them hear it in the locker room or what. But what I was going to say is that, you know, we talked like Inter Miami had one of the best. They were in the winner's section last week because they had a great win at DC United where they didn't have Messi. Suarez scored a brace, and they looked pretty much as dominant without Messi as they had with Messi. But this game, it doesn't really change how I look at them at all. I think they probably were not helped by the weather in this instance, and Lewis Morgan just had the game of his absolute life. But nonetheless, like, when you're a team as hyped as Inter Miami, and like, you know, I've been one of the people hyping them because I think them at their top level is one of, if not the best MLS team I've ever seen in attack, at least. I don't know. You raise your eyebrow a little bit at a abjectly non-competitive game against the New York Red Bulls when you have Busquets, Jordi Alba, and who's the other one? God damn it.
Jordi Alba, Busquets, and Suarez?
And yeah, Suarez, duh.
Come
sorry.
On, bro. The biter? You don't remember the biter?
I was just blanking.
man, they really are losers when you forget about Suarez.
I forgot about Suarez. Nashville SC, you know, we talked about LAFC in the winter section, but like they had their goalie sent off, whatever. That's the worst loss in club history. And like, I think kind of my broader takeaway with Nashville SC is just like, seems like they've stagnated a little bit. They've had kind of the same identity the entire time they've been in MLS, which is Haney Mukhtar, do everything in attack. No one else is really going to do all that much. And he's going to carry you as much as he can, but he's just one man, Hany Mukhtar, right? He can't have two goals, three assists every single week. He does that a lot of weeks, but they haven't done enough to support him. And then their whole identity has kind of been based around, okay, we're going to be like a really stingy defensive team. And like, I think if anything, it seems like they've regressed in that way.
Well, I wouldn't say losing 5-0 is, you know, being not, good defensively.
But like, okay, even outside of a game where you have kind of a fluke situation with your goalkeeper, like they haven't been getting those like 1-0 wins with the regularity that they used to. And they also weren't all that competitive in Champions Cup. I don't know. It just seems like, you know, they're in the loser section for this week, but I my concern meter, if I was a Nashville fan, would be like pretty high that they're not really progressing from the solid foundation that they laid.
Yeah, I agree. They're fraudulent, unfortunately.
They're at least on watch.
They are on watch. They're on watch. All right.
Well, unless either of you had any other takes that you wanted to work in, I think we're good to call it right there.
Yeah, Mark, plug yourself, bro.
Mark, plug yourself. Where can people find you on social and find your writing?
I would prefer people didn't find me because they usually yell at me. So, I mean, you probably know. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Sound at Heart. Like, you can... If you want to get a hold of me, I'm not a hard person to find. Let's just put it that way.
Mark, thank you for hopping on as our first ever returning guest for Lobbing Scorchers. Appreciate your insight as always. I think we had a good roundtable today, had a good little therapy session. Seattle Sounders are back in action with a trip to the LA Galaxy in match day 6, I believe. So we'll be covering that for better or for worse. Until next time, we out. Yeah.